with the classic Bluebird nest box. In the 60s and 70s, people across North America installed Bluebird boxes, and that helped reverse the decline of eastern bluebirds, a conservation success story. But there are many more species that need our help. Birds that historically nested in the cavities of dead trees are finding natural nest holes harder to come by. Many of these species will make use of a nest box in parks or near people's homes. Screech owls, tiny, adorable owls, will happily raise their little ones in a nest box designed for them. It's slightly bigger than a bluebird box, and it's best to install it a bit higher on a tree. Or you could build a house for wood ducks and mount it on a pole. If wood ducks do move in, be prepared for as many as 16 chicks to follow their mother out of the nest. For information on building all kinds of nest boxes and to learn more about what you can do to make a difference for birds, visit birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein. Support comes from Wild Delight Bird Food, offering a variety of blends designed to mimic the natural resources wild birds crave. Available at Chewy.com.
Hello, X-Ray listeners, and welcome again to Jazz in Portland. I'm Thomas Smith here with Tom Skelly.
Hello, Thomas.
Here are some events for the week of April 13th. Monday, April 13th at Corkscrew Wine Bar, 1665 Southeast Bobby Boulevard, Cheryl Alex and Christopher Wojtok, Jazz, Flute, and Guitar, 7 to 9 p.m. Tuesday, April 14th, at Alberta Street Pub, 1036 Northeast Alberta Street, Tezeda Band, Jazz, Soul, and Part Ancient Ethiopian Melodies, and R&B of the 60s and 70s, 7 to 9 p.m. Wednesday, April 15th, at Bar Batalon, 606 Northeast Davis Street, Paul K. Ward and Zach Connolly, 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, April 16th, at Wilf's, 800 Northwest 6th Avenue at Union Station, Happy Hour Jazz Series with Rivka Ross Quartet, 4:30 to 7 p.m. At Arrivederci, 17023 Southeast McLaughlin Boulevard, Ronstein Band featuring Katarina New, Greg Goble, and Ken Hano, 7 to 9 p.m. Friday, April 17th at Wilf's, Paula Byrne with Todd Marston, Bill Athens, and Jason Palmer, 7 to 9:30 p.m. Saturday, April 18th at Mississippi Pizza, the Atlantis Lounge, 3552 North Mississippi Avenue, Pura Vida Orchestra, Latin Jazz, Funk, and More, 8:30 p.m. Sunday, April 19th at the 1905, 830 North Shaver Street, just off Mississippi, Anandi Trio, 5:30 and 7:30 p.m.
Stay tuned for more info on Jazz in Portland and streaming online everywhere at xray.fm.
Thanks for listening. Enjoy Portland music.
You're listening to X-Ray FM.
KXRY Portland.
At 91.1 and 107.1 FM.
And in Nehalem,
Wheeler,
Manzanita,
and Rockaway Beach.
At 91.7 FM. Streaming online everywhere.
Live and archived.
At xray.fm.
Radio is yours.
Radio is yours.
Radio is yours.
Are you a music fan? Well, of course you are, otherwise you wouldn't be listening to X-Ray. I mean a real music fan. The kind who loves the history behind it and a wide variety of it. Do you just like older music from back before algorithms made every new song sound the same? Do you like breakfast? Well, if you answered yes to any of these questions, why not crack some eggs, put on some coffee, and start your Saturdays with Raise a Glass, your musical almanac. Find out who passed away on this day, what notable albums were released, an eclectic mix of tunes with a little history and trivia thrown in. That's Raise a Glass with me, Jim Fisher, Saturday mornings at 8 o'clock on X-Ray FM.
Yes,
For over 45 years, New Narrative has focused on the whole person in our mental health and housing services, serving thousands of adults each year with an integrated model of housing options, peer services, and clinical treatment plans. When Jake entered our services, he had been homeless and had just started his recovery. Thanks to the compassion and support from peer staff leaders and our rental assistance program, Jake was recently able to sign a lease for his new apartment. The stability of a safe, comfortable place to live makes his recovery and wellness journey that much more possible. New Narrative is proud to serve the greater Portland area. More information can be found at newnarrativepdx.org.
Good morning, everybody. This is Aaron Loftus, board member for X-Ray FM, KXRY. Have a sunny day in Portland.
The crops are all in and the peaches are rotting. The oranges are packed and their greed is so dull. You're flying them back to the Mexican border to spend all their money to wait back again. Goodbye to my one, goodbye Rosalita, adios mis amigos, Jesus y Maria. You won't have a name when you ride the big airplane, and all they will call you will be deportees.
Welcome to the second hour of our program. My op-ed today, we had a couple of calls today about the DNC. And in fact, Congressman Pocan was quite candid in expressing his disappointment with Ken Martin's leadership of the DNC and the DNC's basically fecklessness. I agree, and I've said so many times. One of the things that the Democrats seem to be struggling with right now is what's our message going to be going into 2028? They don't want to, go all Bernie and say, hey, we're for Medicare for all, even though 80% of Americans would love it. On the other hand, they don't want to go all, Josh Gottheimer and say, hey, we're all for Citizens United, and we think every Democrat should be on the take. So they're trying to find something in the middle, and, the old saying, there's the only thing in the middle of the road is dead armadillos and a yellow line. So I wrote an op-ed today over at HarbinerReport.com titled, Democrats, to win America back, confront Trump's and the GOP's naked corruption. And, I think that this victory on Sunday in Hungary of Péter Magyar over Viktor Orban really demonstrates the power of a single message that is a single word, corruption. Magyar ran his campaign basically as a clone of Volodymyr Zelensky's campaign in Ukraine, which was successful. Zelensky's campaign was all about how corrupt the Yanukovych regime was. Yanukovych, the prior president before Zelensky, threw him out in 2014, as I recall. Yanukovych was a toady of Putin. Paul Manafort, the guy who ran Trump's first campaign in 2016, Paul Manafort, working for Putin and his oligarchs, helped install Yanukovych in Ukraine and helped him run his administration in a way that, allowed Ukrainian oligarchs to get rich, that seized control of the media, that sucked up to Putin, and the people just basically didn't like. And so Zelensky ran on a campaign of, we're going to end the corruption. And he's by and large done it, by the way. Well, Magyar did the same thing in Hungary. And this is, by the way, not a new thing. I mean, when I was working in Russia for the Salem International Relief Organization, I witnessed the way Alexei Navalny almost took down Putin. I mean, to the point where Putin had to murder him to stop him, because Alexei Navalny had started this organization called the Anti-Corruption Foundation. In the 1980s, when I was working in the Philippines for that same international relief agency, I was literally in Manila the week that Marcos fell, that Cory Aquino took over, essentially. And in fact, I was stuck in my hotel I forget the name of it, but it was one of the nice hotels in Manila. The main street was out in front, and every day there was this just huge parade of people going down the street protesting the Marcos regime. And for 5 days in a row, I couldn't get a flight out of the Philippines back to the United States, even though I had a reservation, because the airline was run by a Marcos crony, and all of his cronies were fleeing the country. They bumped me off my flights 5 days in a row. When Jair Bolsonaro first ran for president of Brazil, he ran on a platform of undoing the corruption that had been exposed by this thing called Operation Car Wash in the Lula administration. Lula, you know, we think of Lula as the great liberal, but, you know, he ran a fairly corrupt administration, and Bolsonaro promised to end the corruption, and that's how he became president of Brazil. I mean, of course, now he's in jail, but because he went the wrong way. But in Delhi, there was an activist, Ana Hazare was her name, in 2011. She did this anti-corruption hunger strike. She nearly died. And it created a political party that eventually took over Delhi, you know, the capital of the country. And, of course, there as I mentioned, the Euromaidan revolution of dignity that brought Zelensky to power in 2014. Now, this has also been true in the United States. Teddy Roosevelt, in 1902, built a foundation of mass support by casting monopolies as corrupt alliances between the morbidly rich and government. The Watergate scandal allowed a reformer, Jimmy Carter, you can trust me, right, to come into office, and to a large extent made Gerry Ford very popular, although not popular enough to shed his corrupt image of being a Republican. Even Donald Trump campaigned on an anti-corruption platform in all three of his elections. His catchphrase was "drain the swamp," which is an anti-corruption message. Now, of course, he was lying through his teeth about it, but, you know, it worked. So it makes perfect sense that Democrats should just pick this up. I mean, consider at every level since the Reagan Revolution, the Republican Party has become completely corrupt. The tax cuts and loopholes for billionaires and big corporations since Reagan add up to more than $38 trillion. In other words, all of our national debt, all of the borrowing that we've done, all of that money was given to billionaires by Republicans. Reagan's 1983 suspension of enforcement of the antitrust laws has led to the average American family paying around $5,000 a year more than the average Canadian or European family pays for the same goods, because we're stuck with monopolies. Five on-the-take corrupt Republicans on the Supreme Court have said that corporations are persons and money is speech, further enhancing corruption in the GOP. Virtually every federal regulatory agency is now being run by people who used to be regulated by them. It's a revolving door. Members of Congress and Trump and his family are engaging in insider trading. The GOP-aligned military-industrial complex has essentially taken over Pentagon procurement. Corrupt. We have an anti-labor department. We have an anti-education department, an anti-civil rights enforcement agency, an anti-environmental protection agency, and it goes on and on and on. Corruption. Trump's mysterious pardons that always seem to go to people who just happen to give him millions of dollars. Corruption. Giuliani claimed that he and Trump were selling pardons for $2 million each and splitting the money. The wholesale gutting of the Internal Revenue Service so that rich people don't get audited anymore. Corruption. The systematic sabotage and privatization of public institutions, from the Postal Service to our public schools to our prisons. Corruption. Republican corruption. The explosion of dark money after Citizens United. We just got the numbers from the Texas Senate race, Tallarico. 97% of the $27 million he's raised so far, 97% of it came from people giving under $100. And then you look at John Cornyn, and it's like, you know, virtually all of the money coming in to the Republicans is coming from billionaires. Corruption. Red state-level voter suppression laws to try to prevent people in the blue cities and red states from voting. Republican corruption. The Republican refusal to allow Medicare to negotiate drug prices, corruption. The systemic dismantling of campaign finance enforcement, corruption. The use of tax havens and trade policy to encourage offshoring our jobs, Republican corruption. The Republican normalization of lobbyists literally writing our laws through organizations like ALEC, corruption. The quiet rewriting of our environmental rules and our labor rules to favor polluting industries by GOP appointees, corruption. The strategic packing of the federal judiciary, corruption. I mean, all the Republican Party is the most corrupt political organization in my lifetime. I've talked before about going after them with RICO, that this is functionally a criminal organization. It runs like the mafia. So, bottom line here. If Democrats are looking for a message, and they are, for a singular message that every Democrat, from people like, you know, Josh Gottheimer, who's on the take and in the bag for Israel, to Bernie Sanders, who is neither and who is a progressive champion, right, every single one of them can be yelling about Republican corruption. That needs to be the message that this fall. It works. It works internationally. It works nationally. It works domestic. It works locally. Democrats running for state office should be talking about Republican corruption. We can see it with our own eyes here in Oregon, how corrupt the Republicans are in our state house, in our state senate. Right, people running for mayor, Republicans running for dog catcher and sheriff, point out their corruption, and you'll win elections.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
16 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. And welcome back. Bill in Morgantown, Indiana. Hey, Bill, thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV. What's on your mind today?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. We don't have that here, but I do have Sirius.
Oh, you're on Sirius XM? Oh, well, you're not able to hear me right now. You're not on Sirius. Do you want me to put you on hold and bring you back on?
Well, the reason I hear you is because you're coming through my phone.
Right. Yeah, I know. And But you won't be able to hear, you know, here on Sirius XM. So your choice. We can talk right now, you know, with about half our audience, our nonprofit audience, or I can pick you up when Sirius XM is back on.
Okay, I'll do it now, Tom.
Okay,
it's something I had talked to you about a couple of weeks ago. When I heard the congressman talk about Abigail Spanberger and signing off on this, getting rid of the Electoral College thing, and I'm not going to state facts, but you can look at the Washington Post. They in the Schar School took a survey of Spanberger in the 3 months she's been governor. Mm-hmm. She's got the lowest rating of any Virginia governor since 1990.
That's interesting. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think first thing is when she came in, and I asked you about this, and she knocked this down. The General Assembly, when the Democrats took it over, proposed 40 tax increases or fee increases mm-hmm. on a state with a $3 billion surplus and $400,000 in a rainy day fund. And my question is, nobody could tell me why. She tamped that down. But I think the thing that's made the biggest two things that's working against her. One is the redistricting. That is not a popular thing in Virginia, even in Northern Virginia.
Wasn't there a citizens referendum where it passed, or was it just the legislature?
Oh, well, no. Oh, it's coming up, but here's the problem. They passed a constitutional amendment, Virginia did, in 2020, saying that they would do there was going to be an independent commission set up.
Right.
And every governor's gone along with this since then, like California. They're undoing the commission to have this temporary vote, and then they're going to bring the commission back.
Right.
Well,
right.
That to me doesn't make sense. I don't care what your issue is.
Well, it's just trying to balance and rebut Texas, basically. They're about the same size.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, Texas had a constitutional thing where they could do what they do.
Right.
Like Indiana, the Republicans here are under Trump's gun because they won't redistrict.
Right.
And likewise, Maryland won't redistrict either.
This is going to the people, though, isn't it, Bill? I mean, you said that.
Oh, yeah. And of course, the
how's
people
it polling?
That,
do you know?
48 against 52-4.
Yeah. Huh, interesting.
But this was Spanberger who won the election for governor by 15 points.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't have to look at other polling, but the other thing that I think has caused a problem for her is taking this sanctuary state situation on the state level.
Yeah.
Virginia's had as many problems in recent news about violent crime by illegal immigrants, however you want to call it, than any state on the East Coast, particularly the Northern Virginia area, which is where the greatest population is. So what I'm trying to say, though, is this, is that basically, you know, I don't think the country is ultra-left, and I don't think it's ultra-right. There's this sweet spot right in the middle.
Yeah.
I got a recommendation.
Sure.
Read Lanny Davis's book that just came out today.
Okay.
That's the way politics in this country should be.
I'll check.
And that was 30 years ago.
Okay,
thank you so much, Tom, for letting me rant.
Anytime, Bill. Good talking to you.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for the call. It is 20 minutes past the hour. I'll be back with you in 60 seconds. Change starts with you. You can be calling your Democratic or Republican representatives to let them know what you think by calling 202-224-3121. It's the Capitol switchboard. It'll get you right through to them. Welcome back. 20 minutes past the hour. Donald Trump. Bernie Sanders says enough is enough. I love it. I don't know if this has happened yet. The story I have is from a few hours ago, and it was that Bernie today, Wednesday, is going to do this, is going to force a vote in the Senate. And there is a way that you can force, you can bring it right to the floor. It's very difficult to do in the House. You got to do a whole discharge petition, song and dance. There's a system for doing it in the Senate that's a little different. But anyway, he's going to get this vote on this pair of resolutions that would block money to Israel for two things. For the sale of 1,000-pound bunker buster bombs, which Israel is using to level entire apartment buildings. They'll identify, you know, oh, on this block, there's a Hamas guy or a Hezbollah guy. So, and then they drop a 1,000-pound bomb, and they literally kill everybody on the block, men, women, and children, which, by the way, is a war crime. And it's being done with our bombs. And, you know, with extreme brutality. And so Bernie is like, no more 1,000-pound bombs for Israel. And then we're also selling them bulldozers that they use to flatten Palestinian homes on the West Bank, in Gaza, and now they're doing it in Lebanon. They're trying to clear all the Palestinians or all the Lebanese out of South Lebanon to create a security zone south of Israel. I mean, really what this is you know, a caller earlier said, you know, Israeli expansionist policy. I agree. And the hard right in Israel is not shy about saying that, by the way. You know, from the sea to the river is not just a Palestinian slogan. It's also an Israeli slogan. So Bernie Sanders, he says, U.S. taxpayers have spent tens of billions in support of the racist, extremist Netanyahu government. Enough is enough. These votes, by the way, will be on the record. It's going to be real interesting to see how this plays out. I'm predicting that the votes will fail because the Republicans are, you know, almost universally in the bag for Israel and Netanyahu, an authoritarian government, and Trump. And Trump's son-in-law, Jared, who's longtime family friend with Netanyahu. Netanyahu used to literally sleep in his bedroom when he came to New York back in the 70s and 80s before he was a big shot. And I still think it's important. It's worth mentioning. It's important. It's a shot across the bow. And I think what's also significant about this is that when you do the polling, over 70% of Democratic voters want to stop all arms sales to Israel. You know, they also have a Medicare for All program there. Everybody in Israel has free health care, part of which we're paying for. We send them $3 billion a year as part of the Camp David Accords. and and Amnesty International now has said that Israeli forces are committing serious violations of international law, including war crimes, genocide, and apartheid. So Bernie Sanders says, Secretary of State Marco Rubio signed an emergency determination just 6 days into the war with Iran in an attempt to bypass the statutory congressional notification period and immediately transfer these weapons to Israel. $300 million of Caterpillar bulldozers and $150 million worth of 1,000-pound gravity bombs. He says these arms sales violate the criteria laid out in the Foreign Assistance Act and the Arms Export Control Act. So according to Bernie, and I think he's a pretty good reasonable authority, the Trump administration is breaking the law in sending this stuff to Israel. Meanwhile, the Trump administration is quietly moving ahead with a strategy to lock out millions of Americans from banking. Now, they're doing this under the rubric of, we're going to stop illegal aliens from having bank accounts, which is kind of dumb. I mean, if somebody's in this country without documentation and they're working, they have a bank account, that money gets reported to the IRS and they pay Social Security and Medicare taxes on it. I mean, it's literally tens of billions of dollars a year. I've seen some estimates of over $100 billion a year that non-documented people in the United States are paying into our system that people over 65 on Medicare and Social Security are benefiting from because they have checking accounts. But the Trump administration wants to do away with that, and they want to force the banks to do the same thing they want to force the people at the voting booths to do at the polling places, which is force you to prove your citizenship. Now, this will particularly fall hard on Republicans, or at least poor Republicans. 1 in 10 Americans don't have a birth certificate. But if you look at this, in West Virginia, only half of Americans have a passport. But in West Virginia, it's only 1 out of 5. The 10 states with the lowest passport rates, all below 37%. Every single one of those 10 states voted for Trump in all three of the last elections. And you're going to have a passport or similar proof of citizenship in order to open a checking account or a savings account. Senator Tom Cotton is cheering this on. I think he's nuts. I think the Republicans, just like with their SAVE Act, I think they're shooting themselves in the foot. I think that they're going to hurt their own constituents more than anybody else. But, hey, pseudo-president Stephen Miller is running the country, at least with regard to domestic policy, and this seems to be the thing that they want to do next. So stay tuned. This is wild stuff. What's on your mind? I'll pick up your calls right after the break. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
It's the True People's Media, the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be right back. Wants your bank account. The Electoral College is dying, and Mondami feasts on the rich. Good morning. This is the Commonwealth Report. News for the public, not the powerful. You can follow us at commonwealthreport.news. Sanders pulls the pin on Trump's bomb factory for Israel. Bernie Sanders is done asking nicely. This week, the Vermont senator is forcing Senate votes to block nearly $500 million in arms sales to the Netanyahu government. We're talking about $151.8 million worth of 1,000-pound bombs used in Gaza and Lebanon, and $295 million worth of Caterpillar bulldozers used to demolish Palestinian homes. Secretary of State Rubio invoked emergency powers to skip congressional review and rush these weapons through without a vote. U.S. taxpayers have spent tens of billions in support of the racist, extremist Netanyahu government, Sanders said. Enough is enough. Senate rules let Sanders force a floor vote with a simple majority and no filibuster. 60% of Americans now view Israel unfavorably. The Democratic caucus is moving. These votes are on the record and they matter. Will even Italy's Meloni walk away from Israel? Here's one for the history books. Italy's far-right Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni, one of Israel's closest European allies, just suspended her country's defense cooperation agreement with Israel. The deal, in place since 2003, covers the transfer of military equipment and technology research. Meloni acted after Israeli forces fired warning shots at a convoy of Italian UN peacekeepers in Lebanon. Italy's foreign minister called Israel's ambassador to Rome for the third time since 2024. Trump, furious at his political ally, publicly snapped at Meloni in an interview. Meanwhile, a European Citizens Initiative calling on the EU to suspend its association agreement with Israel just crossed 1 million signatures. Israel dismissed Meloni's move as meaningless, claiming the pact never had any substantive content anyway. Try telling that to the million Europeans who disagree. Is Trump getting ready to seize your bank account? Here's a story that should alarm every American. The Trump administration is moving forward on an executive order that would require banks to collect citizenship documentation from every customer. Treasury Secretary billionaire Scott Bessent confirmed it's already in progress. The stated goal is pushing undocumented immigrants out of the banking system. But banking experts warn this would strip millions of ordinary Americans of their accounts, including Trump's own voters. Only half of Americans have passports. In West Virginia, just 2 out of 10 people own one. The 10 states with the lowest passport rates all voted for Trump every time. 1 in 10 Americans can't locate their birth certificate. No bank account means no direct deposit and no bill paying. This isn't immigration enforcement. It's economic warfare on working people. Can Virginia's new law finally bury the Electoral College? Virginia Governor Abigail Spanberger signed a landmark bill this week, making Virginia the 19th member of the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. Under the compact, member states pledge their electoral votes to whoever wins the national popular vote, not just their state's winner. Virginia brings the compact to 222 of the 270 electoral votes needed to take effect, just 48 short. When it hits 270, it ends the Electoral College's power to hand the presidency to someone who lost the popular vote, something that's happened 5 times, including twice for Donald Trump. 63% of Americans support the popular vote system, per Pew Research. Republicans are calling it unconstitutional. That's no surprise. The Electoral College is the only thing keeping them in power. Ro Khanna fights back against big oil's war on your wallet. Gas prices are on fire and getting worse. Crude oil is trading above $100 a barrel because of Trump's stupid war against Iran, and Americans are watching pump prices climb by the day. California Congressman Ro Khanna is introducing legislation to ban U.S. gasoline exports whenever the national average price exceeds $3.12 a gallon, a threshold we've already blown past. Here's the outrage. America is now the world's largest exporter of motor gasoline, while families struggle at the pump. Big oil is shipping our supply overseas for maximum profit. Khanna says we need a new energy policy, not driven by oil company greed. His bill faces long odds in this Congress, but the point is clear. Working people are bleeding at the pump while oil executives pocket the profits. Mayor Mamdani finally gets to eat the rich. New York City Mayor Zoran Mamdani just scored his biggest win yet, and it tastes delicious. Governor Kathy Hochul, who had been blocking Mamdani's tax the rich agenda for months, flipped and backed a brand new annual tax on luxury second homes in New York City worth $5 million or more. This is the first pied-à-terre tax of its kind in New York State history. These are the apartments owned by billionaires and global elites that sit empty most of the year while working New Yorkers can't pay rent. Hochul's office estimates the tax will generate at least $500 million a year. Mamdani called it a step toward making the ultra-wealthy pay their fair share. 62% of New Yorkers support taxing the rich. Pull up a chair. The feast has begun. And that's the way it is today, Wednesday, April 15th, 2026. I'm Tom Hartman. Share the Tom Hartman program with your friends. Our podcast, The Hartman Report, is absolutely free and available wherever fine podcasts are available. And the entire three-hour podcast is available over at TomHartman.com. Human beings have a couple of unique characteristics. The first is that we can be very tender and loving and concerned and caring toward people we perceive as being our group, us. We can also be extraordinarily violent against people that we consider to be them, if we think of them or this other as a threat. Probably the classic example of this is Adolf Hitler convincing Germans that, you know, Jews were a threat to them and good Germans going along with the Holocaust. Well, this othering is built into our DNA. This is, you know, ancient stuff. And the Republican Party, since the time of Nixon, when he started, you know, picking up the white racist vote after Democrats laid it down in the 60s, Republicans have been using this to try to other minorities in America as a political strategy. And this is really deadly stuff. There's a whole op-ed about it over at HartmanReport.com. Is othering human nature's deadliest instinct? Check it out. Welcome back. 35 minutes past the hour. And, you know, what's on your mind today? Susie in Willits, California. Hey, Susie, what's up? Susie, watching Free Speech TV.
Greetings, Tom.
Hey, what's up?
I just wanted to talk about Eric Swalwell.
Uh-huh.
And
your phone has gone funky, Susie. I don't know if you're using Bluetooth or something, but you're coming in and out.
Oh, okay, is this better?
Try it again.
Is this better?
It sounds like it, yeah. Go ahead.
All right, well, this kind of reminds me, I mean, I don't know, that this caller yesterday, I think, called in and saying how the men are blamed.
Yes, Susie, your phone is breaking up again.
I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm going to put you on hold, and maybe you and Mateo can figure it out. She's on line one, Mateo, or she can call right back. Steve in Chicago. Hey, Steve, what's on your mind today?
Good afternoon, Tom. Thanks for my call. A little earlier, first off, I am shocked when the congressperson, Mr. Khanna, was saying that he has no contact with the DNC. I find that insane.
That wasn't Khanna, that was Mark Pocan, but yeah, I agree with you.
Yes, excuse me, yes. And what? It seems to me that the Democrats have an opportunity of a lifetime coming in the midterms, an opportunity of a lifetime. And if they blow this because they don't have their act together,
yeah,
it would be catastrophic.
Yeah.
And referring to an earlier call, the gentleman from Virginia, who was talking about Virginia politics and about politics are in the middle, I adamantly disagree at this point. We need a New Deal 2.0. Mm-hmm. Is what we need.
I agree.
We need FDR type. In fact, come out and say it. I would come out and say we're going to do a New Deal 2.0 for 2000 whatever, and go for it. Take it to the limit, and we could transform the country now, especially after Trump. Yeah. Anyway, that's what I have on my mind today.
Well, I completely agree with you, Steve, and I would love to see something like that happen. And I know that there are multiple people in the Progressive Caucus who are trying to put something like that together. Zoran Mamdani got his thing together. By the way, Mateo, Susie's on line one, and she's having a problem with her phone. If you can check that out, I'm completely with you. So you know, hopefully, we'll get there.
Okay. Now, I mean, from your what would be the best strategy now, this thing on corruption going into the midterms, would it be smart to announce their platform a la 2.0 FDR before the midterms or after the midterms for the national election?
The problem with that is you'd have to get a majority of Democrats or Ken Martin and the DNC to sign off on that. And I don't think that, they're not behaving like progressives. And what you're talking about is a progressive platform. So I'm not sure how that would work. But this anti-corruption platform that I'm proposing can exist independent of the political spectrum. I mean, even the most on-the-take Democrats can easily talk about the corruption of Republicans. I realize it would be a little cynical, but, you know, I still think it'll work for them. So in that regard, I would just, you know, if you get the newsletter from Hartman Report, or if it, you know, tomorrow it'll be reprinted over on Raw Story as well. And in fact, I just put it up on DailyKos, too, .com. So if you have any kind of contact with your member of Congress and your senators who are Democrats here in Illinois, pass it along to them and say, hey, take a look at this. Seriously consider this. We need some, you know, organized messaging. So, Steve, thank you for the call. Let's try Susie again in Willits, California. Hey, Susie, can you hear me now? Or, I mean, yeah, well, you could hear me before. I couldn't hear you.
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, great. And you sound normal again.
I really want to... Okay. I just want to put out a lot of kudos to Mateo. Mm-hmm. That is the nicest man, and everyone loves him.
He's a sweetheart, yeah. And he lives on a sailboat right down the road here from us. He's just a great guy. Fascinating fellow.
Yes, well, I've been impressed every time I've spoken to him. So, what I want to talk about is that call.
Jeremy,
yesterday.
I'm sorry, I was yelling for Mateo. Mateo's out sick today, so that was Jeremy that you're talking to, Susie. My apologies. Anyway,
well, they kind
they're
of
both great guys.
Sound the same.
Yeah, they're both great
yeah,
guys.
I'm sure they are.
Yeah. So,
at any rate, about
Swalwell.
This
and women.
Yeah, was Swalwell. No, really what I want to talk about is when men have power, they think they can do anything. And especially you have power and money.
Mm.
And,
well, money,
you know,
is
it's
power.
Just like women are always blamed. You shouldn't have worn this. Oh, my gosh, you're out too late by yourself. You're riding your bike. I mean, this guy is totally one of those guys, or he's completely out of touch, because every woman I have ever spoken to has had some, even if it's so maniacal as just snapping your bra or, you know, sniffing your, I mean, invading your space, like they're bigger and they're stronger and they think they can have control.
Yeah.
And I'm really, really, and I have to share a story with you. This was in the early 80s. I was only 18 years old. I worked at Norton Air Force Base as a lifeguard, swim instructor, you know, everything else. And this one boss, which one I thought was completely unprofessional, and also he just liked to hang on all the female lifeguards.
Mm-hmm.
Just hang on him. And I told him, no touchy, get away from me.
Mm.
And so I apply for the same job in the next summer, and I'm not rehired. And I said, no. I'm going to go up to Human Resources and find out what the dilemma is.
Right.
It's because I didn't let him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know what? I saw him and witnessed him jumping off the board with little girls all the time.
Wow.
So I got my job back, and he was fired.
Oh,
but I mean,
good on you, Susie.
Why would I even have to do that?
Good on
you. I know, but why would I even have to do that?
I know. It's a patriarchal society.
You know,
I mean, you know,
like,
they even claim God has a penis, you know?
Testosterone has a, it's a bad thing.
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
And wars and religions and
yeah, and the Me Too movement, I think, has really moved America forward substantially, but it's going to take a lot more than that. Susie, thank you. Well said, and thanks for the great story. Dave in Hoffman Estates, Illinois. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Quick one on like what you're talking about with Israel and Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that the same thing that Hitler did back then with the Lebensraum?
Lebensraum, yeah, which is translates into living room. You know, Hitler's claim was we need more room for Germans, and so let's take part of Austria, let's take part of Czechoslovakia. Yeah, Yeah.
And then with about the blockade and all that stuff, and but some foreign policy experts are warning that the Strait isn't the only potential choke point that Iran and its proxies could
there's
leverage.
There's two others, yeah.
Right. In particular, their site, the Bab el Mandi Strait, which sits at the mouth of the Red Sea,
yep,
just off the coast of Yemen.
Yep.
The waterway is highly susceptible to attack from the Iranian-backed Houthis,
yep,
who control most of Yemen.
Yep.
And the Houthis are the ones who pioneered, in a way, this idea of using asymmetric capabilities to disrupt maritime traffic.
And right, which is why the Saudis have been, you know, have tried blockading them, they've tried starving them, they've tried bombing the crap out of them. You know, and of course, the Houthis are being supported by Iran. So, it's not been successful. But this is the main reason why Saudi Arabia, which has given Jared Kushner billions of dollars, and he apparently is giving him billions more, had been arguing so strongly that the United States should get in with Netanyahu and bomb Israel. Apparently now they're backing away and they're saying, you know, this is starting to hurt us. But your point is well taken, Dave. Thank you very much for the call. We're in over our head right now. Trump this morning saying, oh, well, I'm going to open the straits. Yeah, good luck with that.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
45 minutes past the hour. Picking up your calls here. We'll be right back. And welcome back. Hector in San Antonio, Texas. Hey, Hector, thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV. What's on your mind today?
Oh, thank you for taking my call, sir. Thank you very much. Yes, this might be something that the congressman could follow up with, or he could let somebody know. But I wanted to do we know at this point if Noam has vacated the house that she was squatting in? I recall hearing that she had taken over the house that is supposed to be the residence for the commandant of the Coast Guard.
Right.
Or, you know, as she was squatting there.
Who got fired because she was a woman.
Yes, that's right. That's right. I'm hoping, you know, that by now she's vacated. And I'm also hoping that Lewandowski will be indicted as soon as possible. He is exactly the kind of man who should be wearing an ankle monitor and who should be forced to take anger management classes. You know, here in San Antonio, he's the kind of guy who would already be on probation, you know, having to see a probation officer because he does have a history of aggressive behavior and picking fights.
Specifically toward women, too.
Oh, yes, yes. So he's the kind of person who should have an ankle monitor.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I am very hopeful that a large part of the Democratic agenda, once they take control of the House and hopefully the Senate, you know, this fall, will be accountability and the kind of accountability, serious accountability, not just slap on the wrist, not any of this Merrick Garland, well, we're going to take 2 years and we're going to think about it. We're going to look very carefully. Maybe we'll, and eventually the pressure will get so, none of that BS. You know, just go after these guys. I'm with you. Hector, thank you. Well said. David in North Miami Beach, Florida. Hey, David, what's up?
Which has no beach. Hi.
Yeah.
As the would-be mayor down here, all these jokers want to bring back more child labor. Mm-hmm. At 16, working fast food, imagine my surprise in a freezer, reasonably big and strong, to find my female manager, all 2 years older than me, trying to give me a back rub. So look forward to that kind of nonsense in the future as we get back to Gilded Age.
Yeah.
But the dumber part, President W. follows flaws. At least he had a director of lessons learned. Why don't we have it? I can't even find a reference to it anymore. Poor Stuart Baker, I think he teaches at Pepperdine University. I mean, why don't we have that? I mean, can't John Meacham help nominate somebody?
What am I missing here? I don't understand what you're asking. I must have missed a word or two.
There used to be a job at the White House, Director of Lessons Learned, Stuart Baker.
Really? I had no idea.
Pepperdine.
Yeah.
See, I don't know if I'm having a Mandela effect, but that was a thing. And
Director of Lessons Learned?
About a president.
Really?
director of Lessons Learned. I
Who
know,
put
I've
that into place?
I can't find it. But it was Stuart. I was under W.
Wow.
And, right, Stuart Baker.
Yeah.
I think with a U.
Yeah. But that person, is, that person or that position has since vanished? Is that your point?
No, that the position not only has vanished, it is, I can't even prove it exists. I'm going to have to dive Trump, down in my memory.
Trump doesn't learn from lessons.
Why not? And so, right. So that we would have presidents who are aware that the Strait of Hormuz is a natural bottleneck.
Yeah.
The way, you know, you needed elephants across the Alps.
Well, you know, yeah, exactly. You don't. Speaking of Hannibal, yeah. No, you don't have to have a director of lessons learned to know that. I mean, any idiot who's just simply watched the news for the last 40 years knows that the Iranians can and have on multiple occasions threatened to shut down the Straits of Hormuz. Now, this is just a sign of Trump being stupid. Thank you, David. Hey, thanks so much for sharing our program and for reaching out to our stations and sponsors and letting them know that you're listening. It really means a lot to us. Well, it's the brand new Confederate States of America, plantation politics. You know, the old Confederate States, today known as MAGA America, the new Confederate States, were devoted to making America as white as possible, stripping women and minorities of political and economic power, gutting workers' rights, rigging election outcomes, their leaders nakedly taking bribes, using the phony veneer of Christianity to justify brutal policies, including slavery, making queer people invisible, reconfiguring schools for indoctrination, having their militias terrorize minorities and their opponents, and maintaining a government of, by, and for rich white men. And these are the principles, the core principles around which the modern-day GOP has reorganized itself. You can find an entire article about this. It lays the whole thing out over at HartmanReport.com. It's titled, The Plantation Politics of MAGA America. Is this the future we want? Check it out. Mm-hmm. Welcome back. 51 minutes past the hour. Picking up your calls here. Luke in Aberdeen, South Dakota. Hey, Luke, what's up?
Well, good day to you, Tom. I was telling the gentleman there that answered the phone that I've actually been listening to you for 30 years.
Well, I've only been doing the show for 24 years, so that's a tough one.
Well, 24, whatever, but I got introduced to you because all you had was an old truck and an AM radio, mm-hmm. and you would be on first, and then I would get the rest of the afternoon to scream at the radio because Rush Limbaugh was on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, back in the day, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I have fond memories of my summers spent doing that. Anyway, yeah. Being from South Dakota, I was hoping maybe I could give you a little bit of perspective. I know that this is oftentimes a state that's ignored in the national discourse because mm-hmm. it's really just not too much, not even a million people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they have effectively done all of the wish list of every single thing that like Project 2025 wanted to do, and including like all of the older like neoconservative sort of values that they wanted to indoctrinate in, or put into law in South Dakota. South Dakota is one of the first states to put into law that when they made abortion illegal, that they would immediately, day one, it would be illegal in South Dakota. But the corruption in South Dakota, of course, we all know about Kristi Noem. Kristi Noem literally left the taxpayers with hundreds of thousands of dollars that she racked up on credit cards in this state. And she not only pulled that hustle with the commercial thing on a national scale, she did it in South Dakota. There was a meth, we're on it campaign that came out of a Minnesota advertising firm that was directly connected to her, and they made an obscene amount of money off of those too.
Yeah.
So this
yeah.
is a hustle for her.
Yeah, leopards
so
don't change their stripes or spots.
The thing is, the Republican mindset that like nationally, I think most people look at and they're terrified to realize that there's just complete 100% corrupt control of South Dakota.
Have they succeeded in impoverishing your state? I mean, nine of the 10 poorest states in the country are Republican run. Is South
Dakota.
And
you know it, living in South Dakota.
Yeah.
I was never able to make more than $30,000 a year any year I was working in South Dakota.
Wow.
So, I mean, and you think about health care? Heck no. That's your problem. Mm-hmm. Do you get it? It's a right to work state, but the only right is to work. Well, there's two hustles that are worthy of being pointed out here, okay? First off, the fact that we've had two state leaders in this state kill people on the roads, and neither one of them really got too much. Bill Jankel got 100 days in jail for killing a guy. And the Romsberg guy, who's actually the attorney general of South Dakota, he murdered him and left the guy in the middle of life in the ditch.
Wow. And are these car accidents you're talking about? Or people going out?
Yeah, they just ran him down off the road. Huh. Yeah, they hit him on the road. And then they just drove on like it was nothing.
Hit pedestrians?
Especially that Romsberg guy who still has power in South Dakota.
Wow.
So that right there just shows the full corruption of it. The next one would be, if you remember a while back, and it's been a while, but they used to do a visa program where if you invested a certain amount of money in a corporation in America, it fast-tracked you for a visa program, EB something.
Yeah.
I forget what the abbreviation is.
Yeah.
Well, South Dakota was up to its eyeballs in that program. Hmm. And they robbed that. They robbed so much money from it. And then in the end, the guy who was chiefly responsible for it, I forget what it's called. It was some other like side group that was directly associated with.
Hmm.
He ended up conveniently killing his entire family and then setting the house on fire.
Whoa.
And I mean, he had like little kids and stuff like that. Come on. And
whoa.
Then the other guy, who I personally got threatened by an anonymous call because I was looking into his death, this Richard Benda guy, he supposedly walked out into a tree line, blew his own brains out with a shotgun, and leaned it up against a tree. Do you want to bet
after
that
he was
didn't
dead.
Happen either? And when I tried looking into it, because I have my whole life is South Dakota politics, and I've been in politics my whole time, basically, ever since I could. And when I started looking into it, that's when I got that mysterious phone call and told me to back off. I don't even know.
Sounds like you've got the old boy network on steroids down there or up there in Aberdeen, South Dakota.
That's what I'm saying. People need to. The reason I'm calling you is because you were talking about gerrymandering and how this works.
Corruption.
It is so horribly gerrymandered in South Dakota that the Democratic Party admits it openly that there's no chance that they have of winning.
Yeah.
We put a candidate up just for the crap of it, just for nonsense.
Yeah.
And he never gets, because they gerrymandered the district so much that there's one of them that actually is connected up, and it's like 50 miles of just a little strip of land that connects up another chunk.
Wow. Luke, thanks for the update from South Dakota. Amazing stories. Incredible. Congressman Ro Khanna is going after big oil, and Mayor Mamdani finally gets to eat the rich. I'll tell you about those two stories on the other side of this break. Stay with us.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
X-Ray FM is supported by our friends at Harka Architecture, whose mission is to uplift your ideas and our community. Harka brings expertise in toxicity, high performance, and resiliency to all their projects. They are a full-service architectural and interior firm specializing in middle housing infill, ADUs, remodels, and adaptive commercial reuse.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1916. That was the day that the American Federation of Teachers was founded at a meeting at the City Club in downtown Chicago. Three Chicago teachers groups helped to organize the meeting. They were convinced that in order to improve working conditions for teachers, they would need to formally join the labor movement. In 1902, the Chicago Teachers Federation had become the first teachers organization in the nation to join their Central Labor Council. Council. Now they believed it was time to form a national organization. The meeting was also attended by representatives from nearby Gary, Indiana, as well as New York City, Washington, D.C., and Scranton, Pennsylvania. Just a few weeks after the meeting, the American Federation of Teachers had received its charter from the American Federation of Labor. The new union grew quickly. Within 4 months, 174 locals approached membership of 10,000 educators. But then came a backlash from school boards who did not want to negotiate with the new unions. Board members publicly called into question whether it was appropriate for teachers to unionize. The American Federation of Teachers numbers fell to below 5,000. But the union was not